and Wade noticed. "Don't like kids much?" he asked, and stopped between the factory and the supermarket. "Can you just tell me where we're going?" I snapped. On the other side of the road, there was a metallic board on which magnet letters had been mounted. Two kids were shuffling them around, and my attention was temporarily drawn to the letters' bright colors before I realized what they spelled. "Ordo ab cow." The kids both looked at me, two smiling boys, while I rummaged through my scarce knowledge of Latin. Unlike many, I had the chance to study some during high school. "From chaos comes order," I muttered. "Yep, add that to the list of weird." I didn't get a chance to ask Wade about the letters as a 4-year-old girl clamped onto my leg, giggling and refusing to let go. "Play with me! Play with me!" she said, her curly brown hair framing her cute round face. For some reason, this little girl actually liked me. I gave her a smile, then shook my head, while Wade watched the exchange with glimmering amusement. "I can't, sweetie. This guy here wants me to go with him," I replied gently. She looked up at Wade, then frowned. "Do you know him?" she asked, pouting. "Not really, no," I said. "My mom says to never talk to strangers, not even if they give you candy." The shadow of a smile flickered over Wade's face, and I shrugged in response. "He didn't give me any candy," I sighed. The little girl scowled at Wade, then got up and released my legs so she could ball her hands into little fists and rest them on her hips in a reprimanding posture. "You should give her candy."
"I will. I promise."
Wade nodded, trying hard to keep a straight face. "Oh, wow. Call me crazy, but you two would look great in an Amber Alert, Wade," I said. Wade shook his head slowly, clearly displeased with my comment, then walked toward the emergency exit door to our left. I followed him through, and we reached a small corridor with a secondary staircase. There was another door right ahead, and Wade stopped in front of it.
"I'm going to overlook the fact that you just basically called me a child abductor right now, and welcome you to the San Diego Coven," he said, his tone flat as he placed his palms on the door at shoulder height.
"We're in Kid City, Wade. Did you forget to take your medication this morning by any chance?" I retorted, still not sure what we were doing. At least there were several more feet between me and the kids now, and my nerve center was no longer controlled by the emotions of 4-year-olds.
"Aperi portam," Wade said quietly,
and the 10 rings on his fingers lit up red. He pushed the door open, on which there was a janitor sign, then walked through. There was nothing but darkness ahead. Things were getting weirder with each second that passed, but it was too late to turn back. I figured I could always kick him in the nuts if he tried something funny. I walked in after him, and quickly came to a halt as I realized that everything around me had suddenly changed. The janitor door closed behind us with a loud clang, and I stood in awe, smack in the middle of a massive hallway. It stretched far and wide, with dozens of large black wooden doors on both sides. The ceiling was high, beautifully composed with interconnected arches, neo-Gothic relief sculptures, and gilded details, in eye-popping contrast to the creamy marble walls and dark blue floor. It was an architectural masterpiece all by itself, and I could only imagine what the other rooms looked like. One thing didn't make sense, though. "Wade, what's happening here?" I murmured, gawking at the dragon-like sculptures holding up the arches. "I've been over this place repeatedly, and this wasn't here. It's not supposed to be here."
"It isn't," Wade replied, turning to face me. "This, technically speaking, doesn't exist in the real world. Welcome to the San Diego Coven, Harley Smith."
"This doesn't exist, yet I'm standing right in the middle of it."
"Call it an interdimensional pocket," he said with a shrug. "We couldn't exactly build our coven where the humans could see it or easily access it, so we devised these bubbles that exist between dimensions." He motioned for me to follow him, pointing at the end of the hallway. A world within our world, I breathed, trying to take it all in. Fortunately, I'd been dealing with my otherworldly ability since I was 7. I'd gone well past the stage at which something like this could shock me to the point where I'd crumble and lose my mind, simply rejecting this new reality. Nevertheless, it still wasn't easy to digest. One too many questions fluttered through my head, but I held my tongue, knowing that I'd get my answers soon. Hopefully I'd get them one at a time.
You're probably wondering how this all works, Wade said. Space is not linear, nor is it finite. It can be bent to fit our needs, if we know how to do it. Most importantly, achieving such feats requires tremendous amounts of energy. Everything you see around you, in fact, is energy solidified into matter.
I walked over to the wall and touched it. Its surface felt smooth and cold, and my skin vibrated gently in response. I pushed a finger forward, but the marble didn't budge. It was solid, indeed.
This is incredible, I murmured. So you're telling me that this space here, it can't be seen at all from the outside, and no one can come in?
Only those of us able to use magic. The coven is rigged to record and allow certain individuals in, those who belong here, those who belong to other covens, and those we approve to come in,
Wade explained, then motioned for me to follow him.
Come on, I'll show you around.
I nodded slowly, my mouth open, and reached his side. We walked forward, watching as doors opened and people moved around, all of them young and dressed like normal people. They all stared at me for a while, before going back to whatever business they had behind various doors.
How does the coven recognize who's who? I asked.
Magic.
Wade smirked.
There are spells in place.
Okay. You'll have to be a little bit more specific than that.
You'll find out more soon enough, don't worry. For now, just think of this structure as a massive self-sustained organism that has a conscience and a memory. It knows who we are, what we do, and when we do it. It remembers our steps with photographic precision, and it can be set to deny access to those lacking the appropriate clearance.
We reached the end of the hallway, which split into two equally large corridors that went in opposite directions. On the wall in front of us, a giant plaque was mounted. It was made from stainless steel, and I could see myself and Wade reflected on its shiny surface. The words I'd seen earlier on the kid's magnet board were clearly engraved at the top in elegant swirly letters.
Ordo ab cal.
Below it, a block of text followed, also in Latin. What's that? I asked, trying to read and failing to understand about 90% of it. Other than the words mystic, courage, and virtue, nothing seemed familiar.
A pledge of allegiance, Wade replied. It's the oath we take when we join the coven, a promise that transcends time and space. Words of great importance that we can never go back on. You'll learn it as well.
Whoa there, buddy. I'm here to say hi, not join your weird cult. Though I'll have to admit it looks cool and all, I said. I followed Wade down the corridor to our right, constantly looking around, admiring the dragon-esque sculptures and sharp arches stretching overhead, the brass chandeliers, and chiaroscuro paintings. These things were probably worth a fortune, but the aesthetic was pretty weird. The artwork was more classical, while the arches and architectural details were neo-Gothic, and the walls and floors were simple, downright minimalistic. My 2 years with the Smiths had given me access to a private school education, and it was there that I finished high school. My teachers tended to look down on me, given my rough-around-the-edges attitude, but they had no other choice but to teach me the same as the ritzy kids in class, subjects that included art, architecture, and design. I was surprised to see I'd remembered some of it as I analyzed my surroundings. It all looked beautiful, but eerily different. It felt that way, too. For lack of a better word, I decided to stick with otherworldly when describing the overall look of the San Diego Coven. People passed by us, most of them nodding at Wade. The ladies in particular seemed thrilled to see him. "They're all, witches?" I asked, making eye contact with some of them. The vibe they gave me was a mixture of curiosity and suspicion. I was a stranger on their turf, after all, so that didn't come as a surprise.
"Witches, warlocks, yes," Wade replied,
then turned left into a stunning dining hall. It was enormous, with three long rows of white marble tables in the middle, covered with white porcelain and sterling silver tableware. Globe-shaped light pendants hung from the ridiculously high ceiling, and another table was set at the far end, perpendicular to the others.
"This is the banquet hall," Wade said. "It's where we all eat. Designated staff handle preparation and service, of course. Some of our younger witches and warlocks are given part-time jobs here. Not that they need to pay to live here, but the human world can be expensive to navigate."
"You mean you people live here, too?"
"Most of us, yes. Rarely does the Coven allow its people to rent their own places in the city. It's safer and easier to live here. It's not like we lack the space," he replied.
"What does the Coven do, exactly?"
"A lot of things," Wade said, smirking.
Then he walked back out into the corridor, with me not far behind.
"Magic is the result of powerful energy manifested through physical bodies. We are born magical, and never made. The energy itself is chaos, the founding force of the universe itself, the power that fuels the world. However, from chaos comes order. It's what we live by. There must be rules in place. We're heavily outnumbered by humans, and we are peaceful by nature. You're probably well aware of the fact that humans tend to destroy what they don't understand."
"Yeah, I guess. I've seen the movies," I said.
"You must have been called a freak more than a couple of times, too, right?"
Flashbacks to the first couple of times that my powers manifested knocked me over the head. "Among other terms, yes. I'd been called a monster, too. A weirdo. An abomination. I could go on, but there was no point in dwelling on the past. I'd survived it."
"Well, the Covens are here to protect those of us through whom chaos flows freely. Those of us capable of magic," Wade replied. "In return, we adhere to the laws, we enforce them, and we do our best to make a positive impact on the world. Humans aren't doing a very good job of taking care of this planet, or themselves, which is where we come in moderation, of course. We're not superheroes, nor do we have a duty to serve them. Our main purpose is to keep them out of magical harm's way. There are things out there, creatures other than witches and warlocks, and phenomena that humans would never be able to understand. We keep them out of sight. We neutralize them if needed." "Much like he did with a gargoyle the other night," I thought, nodding slowly. We reached another hall, this one three times as big as the dining room. Its walls were smooth and black, and there was a plethora of obstacles and training dummies, targets and barriers. This was a training area, and judging by the burn, frost, and tear marks on the wooden puppets, this was where the witches and warlocks basically let loose. A variety of medieval shields and weapons were mounted on the walls, swords and silver-plated scabbards with gemstones embedded into the hilts, bows and arrows of different sizes, lances and spears, hammers and hatchets, knives and daggers, and several clubs. This was a place for warriors. I was more of a Mustang and leather jacket kind of girl. There were about 12 witches and warlocks training, holding their hands out as they launched fireballs at well-mounted targets. An instructor in a black military-style uniform walked behind them, barking orders and criticizing their stances.
"Spread those legs out, Rodriguez. If you're a good shot, you won't have to worry about someone getting close enough to kick you in the balls."
"Wow," I breathed, feeling sorry for the Rodriguez boy, whose embarrassment was flushing my cheeks already.
"This is where we train, as you can see. That's O'Halloran, one of our instructors. You'll like him, I think. He's just as abrasive as you are," Wade said.
"If I'm abrasive, then that makes you what exactly? Sulfuric acid?" You know, that smart mouth of yours won't get you anywhere good in this place, Wade retorted, then stepped in front of me. I moved back, but he followed, maintaining a distance of a few inches. His face was too close to mine, his irritation setting me on fire. Or was it just his presence that had that effect on me? I wasn't sure, but his card trick still creeped me out 6 ways from Sunday, and his arrogance made me want to punch him. The farther I got away from him, the better.
Crowley,
O'Halloran shouted, prompting Wade to look over his shoulder.
Is that the new girl?
Yeah,
Wade replied. New girl? No, I'm just visiting, I said, raising my voice to make sure O'Halloran heard me. When he didn't respond to my statement, I tilted my whole upper body to the right so I could see past Wade's broad chest. O'Halloran was tall and massive, the typical soldier type, his features rough, his chin square, and his bluish eyes narrowed at me. Something about him made my blood chill. Probably the fact that no emotions came through from him. He was either a master of self-control or an android. My money was on the mechanical parts.
Bring her in later. I want to see what she can do,
O'Halloran replied, completely ignoring me. Wade looked at me, then exhaled sharply. He was genuinely frustrated, though I couldn't tell why exactly. I felt what he felt, but the why part belonged to his thoughts, which I didn't have access to. Ironically, I'd spent half my life wishing I didn't have these abilities. However, as I walked out after Wade, I was wishing I had more power, enough to be able to read his mind, and maybe even disappear. My conscience and my instincts were already at odds. Part of me was excited about this place. It felt good. It had a hint of home that I couldn't ignore. But my father's words kept blaring in my head. Stay safe. Stay smart.
Let me show you the living quarters, Wade said, as we advanced through the corridor.
A double set of doors covered in elegant mahogany relief sculptures awaited at the far end. He touched the brass doorknobs and muttered something under his breath. It sounded like Latin, but I didn't pay enough attention as I stared to my right, where an archway led into what looked like a courtyard, lush with trees and flowers. A small, round stone fountain stood in the middle, water trickling from a dragon's mouth into a fan of seashells. The term otherworldly came back to mind, and I felt as though I'd left the material plane, sincerely fascinated by the courtyard's peacefulness.
Come on,
Wade said, snapping me back to reality. The living quarters were incredible. I had the feeling of being inside a luxury hotel, with 3 levels of rooms lining the circular arena and dozens of staircases connecting each floor. Potted magnolia trees stood in the middle, surrounded by black, forged iron benches with wooden backs. Witches and warlocks buzzed around, while several men dressed in black uniforms guarded the ground floor. You guys have security here? I asked, noticing the uniform's resemblance to what I'd seen on O'Halloran.
Not always, Wade replied. There's been a string of, peculiar incidents, and the coven decided to add some extra detail to the more vulnerable areas just in case.
Define peculiar.
Out of the ordinary.
Now you're just pulling my leg, I said. Why is this area vulnerable then?
We live here. These are our homes. We sleep here. If anyone were to ever try and attack the coven, this is where they would come first,
Wade replied.
We're relaxed here. We put our feet up. We close our eyes.
I nodded slowly. It made sense. If I were a bloodthirsty warlord, I'd definitely go for the tents first, at night, when the soldiers slept. The thought of that level of vulnerability made me uneasy. To be honest, if I were to follow my instincts to the letter, I would have ended up in a hole in the ground somewhere, sleeping with my eyes open and a string connecting my toe to a booby trap outside in case of intruders. I did appreciate the risk in living sometimes, but the coven was different. There was an antithesis between a feeling of home and a hint of danger, and I couldn't really put my finger on the latter. Across the circular hall were floor-to-ceiling windows, 3 giants made of thick glass and framed in gilded wood. I held my breath as I walked over and realized that I was looking out into the real world. Right before me was Balboa Park, sprawling with its short grass and anemic trees, crude green buds popping all over the branches. The sky above was bright and blue, and people were out there, walking their dogs, watching their kids play, and taking selfies by the fountain. All of them completely unaware that we existed, that we were watching them.
"It's time for you to meet the director,"
Wade said, startling me as he once again stood too close, his breath tickling my ear. "The... who? What now?" I spun around with a stutter. He made me nervous. I couldn't tell why exactly, but there was something about Wade, that electric feeling I felt before. It was riffling through me, and my brain wasn't sure what it meant. I'd done my best to keep my distance from people in general, with only a handful of exceptions. My social skills weren't the greatest, and neither were my reactions to new people stepping into my personal space. Whenever Wade got too close, a shot of adrenaline coursed through me. I walked back toward the corridor, with him by my side. My gaze wandered around the hall. A young woman, probably my age, with curly black hair and chocolate brown eyes, stood at the top of the stairs in front of room 234. Only then did I notice the brass numbers on each door. There was a twinkle of curiosity in her eyes, and her lips stretched into a smirk. She was a bit too far for me to feel her emotions with accuracy, but I could definitely get a whiff of amusement. I had a feeling I was some kind of shiny new toy in this place, because she wasn't the only one looking at me like that. Farther down from her was a warlock in his mid-20s, with short platinum hair and sky-blue eyes, who offered the same facial expression. He leaned against the railing as he smiled at me, but it didn't feel like a welcoming smile. Just like with O'Halloran, I couldn't get a good read on his emotions. For the first time in my life, I didn't like not being able to sense someone's feelings. It was a first, and it was full of unknowns. As weird as it had been for me growing up, I'd learned to use my empath abilities to forge ahead. Knowing how people felt helped me keep my distance and steer clear of trouble. Most of the time, anyway. The platinum-haired guy was cold as ice. A blank wall I couldn't breach.
"You do want to meet the director of the coven, don't you?"
Wade said, reminding me that he was still there, waiting for me to come along. I realized that I'd stopped in the middle of the circular hall, staring at the platinum-haired guy. Wade followed my gaze, then raised an eyebrow at me.
"Making friends already?"
he asked. "Surely they're more fun than you," I shot back, regaining my composure. "Don't let them see that you're worried or scared. Keep your cool."
"Smartass,"
Wade said, then walked back into the corridor. I followed, scowling at the back of his neck, and wishing I had laser eyes so I could burn right through and make him suffer a little. The director of the coven. My pulse spiked. I was going to meet the big boss, the big kahuna, the chief wizard in this place. Would they agree to leave me alone if that's what I wanted? I needed my freedom. The coven seemed nice for the most part, but I didn't want to be forced into it. I deserved the right to choose. Chapter 7. At the end of another hallway was a set of black double doors with heavy brass lion heads for knockers. I felt eyes on me, and as I looked over my shoulder, noticed more witches and warlocks staring. They were all curious about the stranger with bright red hair, even brighter blue eyes and a leather jacket. Some were wary of my presence, and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why. I wasn't there to hurt anyone. Wade gave me a sideways glance, observing my uncharacteristic silence.
"Don't take it personally," he said, looking back at those watching us. "You're new here. They'll get used to you. Eventually."
He gripped one of the large brass rings mounted in the lion's mouths and knocked it against the black wood. The doors opened with a loud creak, revealing a spacious office. The bottom half of the walls was covered in lacquered dark walnut paneling, while the top half was dressed in an elegant black and beige wallpaper, its intricate design catching my eye. Red roses blossomed in crystal vases mounted on the decorative wall shelves. The furniture matched the wall paneling, the shelves loaded with hundreds of voluminous leather-bound books, and the lights were partially dimmed, enough to cast a warm amber glow over the room. There was a seating area in the middle, consisting of a sofa and two armchairs, and a massive desk at the far end, where a man stood up. I followed Wade as we walked through the study, my gaze wandering and catching snippets of the book titles along the way. The Aberdeen Bestiary, Slavic Folklore and Sorcery, The Chronicles of Salem.
Harley Smith,
the man standing behind the massive desk said, and smiled. He was tall and classically handsome, maybe in his late 30s at most. He'd stopped trying to control the waves of his short, chocolate-brown hair. His eyes were sharp and emerald green, framed by curved eyebrows against the slim blade of his nose. His masculine features were brought out by the navy blue suit he'd opted for, matched with a white shirt and dark red tie. The dragon head cufflinks were impossible to ignore, as was the way he seemed to stare straight into my soul. In many ways, he reminded me of Wade, though I knew they weren't related, since Wade would have gladly bragged about it otherwise. I take it you're the big boss. I raised an eyebrow, preparing for more snark and arrogance. Two Wades were worse than one. And yet the vibe I got off the guy was noticeably different. He was curious, like most of the witches and warlocks I'd seen earlier, but he was also genuinely excited and downright fascinated by my presence. It was a nice change from the wariness I'd sensed up to that point, not to mention Wade's heartfelt frustration, which was still echoing through me. The man smiled and held out his hand. I stepped forward, and after half a minute of debating whether I should or shouldn't, I shook his hand, instantly reading his emotions. Direct physical contact had an impressive impact on my empathic abilities, as I felt what the other person felt at high intensity.
"I'm Alton Waterhouse," he said,
a gentle southern twang sweetening his speech. "Well, you know my name already," I replied bluntly. He chuckled, then motioned for me to sit in one of the leather chairs facing his desk. I took my seat, then looked up at Wade, who preferred to stand. All the better to look down at me, I guess.
"Thank you for coming, Harley," Alton said, then sat behind his desk. "I'm sure you have a lot of questions, so I'll try to cover as much ground in this introduction as possible."
"I'm all ears," I muttered, crossing my arms. He gave me another smile, as if my thorny attitude was somehow adorable. I didn't like it, but I did have a lot of questions that needed answers.
"I'm director of the Coven, and I'm also in charge of the Fleet Science Center," Alton explained. "Given our complicated nature, witches and warlocks have reached a certain balance while having to share this world with non-magicals. We live and work like everyone else, but we also carry out our duties as members of this coven. In my case, taking over the board of directors at Fleet Science Center seemed like the perfect way to seamlessly integrate both aspects of my life. A significant number of witches and warlocks work at the center with me, for that matter.
So what, you herd kids through the museum during the day and fight evil at night?"
"Not really, no."
Alton chuckled.
"We're not heroes, Harley. We are simply gifted people, and we play our part in this world. I'm sure Wade has already explained the number issue with regards to why we keep our magical existence a secret from the human world."
"Yeah, he mentioned something," I replied, giving Wade a quick glance. The look he gave me chilled me to the bone, so I shifted my focus back to Alton. It was better to focus on the polite adult in the room, not the arrogant thorn in my side.
"Okay,"
Alton continued, and took out a massive old registry from a bottom drawer. He flipped it open, then used a quill and ink to add my name onto one of the pages.
"This is the assessment log. Your name needs to be in here in order for the coven to let you in and out. You have restricted access at this point, but once you progress and make your pledge, more doors will open for you."
I frowned. "Wait, what pledge? That pledge of allegiance you make your people recite?" Alton looked at me for a couple of seconds, then took a deep breath and finished writing my name.
"Harley, This is a safe haven. All the Coven does is protect its people. There aren't too many of us out there. And, as you know, people don't take kindly to those who are different. Man has a natural tendency to destroy what he doesn't understand. And unfortunately, it stands true even in the 21st century. For now, I'm not asking you to pledge yourself to the Coven. The decision will be yours. All I did was add your name to the assessment log so the Coven's magic can allow you to move freely, within certain limits. Highly sensitive areas of our little pocket in the universe are still restricted, though. All you need to do is learn the phrase I used to get us in from Kid City. Wade explained. Aperi portam. It's Latin. Open the door. Simple. Fine. I nodded, narrowing my eyes at Alton. Now spill the beans. What's going on here? What am I? Why am I this way? What do you want from me?
From what Wade has told me, I think it's safe to assume that we are the first magicals you've met, despite your age,
Alton said with a patient smile.
So I'll have to start from the very beginning. Like I said, I'll try to give you as much as I can during this first conversation, but you will have more to learn and understand farther down the road.
Magicals? I prompted.
Witches, warlocks, monsters,
Alton replied.
You've met one of those, too.
The gargoyle. Ugh, yes.
To best understand what you are, you must know about chaos. It is the force behind the universe, the energy that flows in countless forms. It gives life. It fuels the stars. Chaos is everything and nothing all at once. Matter, antimatter, it's all chaos. It's present in humans, in animals, and everything that grows and breathes, too. Witches and warlocks are simply creatures through which chaos flows with greater power. We're special, because we have this connection to the universe on a subatomic level. Our powers, our abilities, stem from chaos.
Alton put his hands out, and his dragon head cufflinks glimmered golden. They were beautifully crafted in gold, with green enamel scales and two red garnet eyes that lit up white. Wade's rings came to mind as I watched threads of concentrated energy pour out of the dragon's open mouths, swirling into a sphere the size of my head. It hovered above the desk, and an image formed inside. I understood then that I was being shown a vivid illustration of what Alton was telling me. The universe glimmered at the center of it, shifting to close-ups of distant planets and constellations.
Chaos is exactly that. Unruly, wild, and intense. If we let it do as it pleases, it will consume and destroy us,
Alton explained.
At the same time, chaos is a ruthless negotiator. What it gives, it takes. For every action, there is a reaction. As magicals, we have developed a strict set of rules meant to guide us and keep us on the right track. If we slip up, if we expose ourselves to the humans, we'll risk not only our lives, but the safety and well-being of our entire species. We respect the unwritten laws of chaos, and we obey the written laws of our covens. It took us a long time, but over the past 2,000 years, we have successfully organized into these secret societies.
So there's more than one coven, I replied.
There is a coven in every major city in this world, each in charge of its surrounding areas. In the U.S., each state is ruled by a mage council. Our society is commonly referred to as the United Covens of America, and we function much like the American government, minus the corporate interests and corruption, of course. Everywhere else in the world, every country has its own mage council to oversee the covens. We've had to close ranks and organize accordingly, especially after the 17th century,
Alton explained. The Salem witch trials, I murmured.
Thousands of innocent people, as well as magicals,
were killed around that horrific period. He sighed. Which is why we are strict, why we monitor our kind, and why we adhere to these rules. Normally, once a magical is discovered, the regional coven assesses and registers the individual. That way, the magical is raised in the system, educated, and taught to use his or her abilities for good, for balance, for peace.
Don't you get the occasional rotten apple? I smirked.
More than occasional, unfortunately, Alton replied, shaking his head. It wasn't a pleasant subject for him, filling him and me with angst and grief. Some think they can take on the whole world. Some consider themselves superior to humans and have utter disregard for innocent lives. Some even believe they can navigate both worlds while indulging in criminal behavior. Unfortunately, all three categories hurt us, because they put us at risk of discovery. Which, again, is why we are strict in enforcing the coven rules.
As I looked into the holographic sphere, I was shown snippets of different witches and warlocks committing horrible crimes, burning entire villages down, killing people, and wreaking havoc over different cities. The coven laws made sense. I'd lived my whole life fearing discovery, keeping my abilities to myself. Knowing there were others like me out there who did the same felt strangely reassuring. "How are you doing this?" I asked, pointing at the sphere. Alton smiled, then gestured at his cufflinks.
"The power inside us is raw. It needs an object that we connect with, something special that we're particularly fond of, or that has great significance to us, to channel this energy, to give it structure and meaning," he explained.
"Kind of like wands, right?"
"Well, yes and no. Mostly no. You can still perform magic without an esprit, but it's just not as strong or as accurate."
"Esprit?" I frowned, my gaze darting between Alton's cufflinks and Wade's rings.
"An object of soul," Alton replied. "It's something that your being resonates with. Don't worry if you don't have one yet. You'll find it now that you know what you're looking for. Everything else is just technique, practice, and education. There are thousands of spells, devised over thousands of years. Words and thoughts that manipulate the energy of chaos and translate into your abilities."
"What can you do, other than put on fancy graphic shows?" I replied, prompting Alton to laugh.
"We're all different on the surface, but the same at our core," he said. "As byproducts of chaos ourselves, we are deeply connected to its children in one way or another. The children of chaos are concentrated forces of the universe, agents of great power. The main ones are Erebus, also known as darkness, Lux, or light, Nyx, commonly referred to as night, and Gaia, Earth, our home."
"What difference is there between darkness and night? They sound the same to me," I shrugged.
"They're not,"
Wade interjected with a scoff.
"Darkness is permanent. It's the twin brother of light, an all-powerful, all-consuming, and unforgiving. Night is like sleep. It's subject to a cycle, and its sisters are the stars and moons."
I looked up at Wade. "Look at you, all poetic and stuff," I said, and he replied with an eye roll and another scoff. I had to admit I enjoyed pushing his buttons. If they were going to force me to stay here, tormenting Wade had to be permitted.
"Gaia has her own children, the four elements, water, fire, air, and earth," Alton continued, "and they're the ones we're all connected to. One way or another, all magicals are able to manipulate one or more of the natural elements. In some rare instances, a magical can influence all four."
I stilled, realizing that I was one such rare instance. I had a history of causing natural disruptions, from freezing the bathwater in a moment of blood-curdling fear with an aggressive foster dad, to setting the Corbin family curtains on fire at Christmas when I was 12. That was after their son tried to touch me in all the wrong places. And let's not forget accidentally splitting Ginger's backyard in two, shortly before my 14th birthday. Oh, and knocking pigeons off the electrical wires outside the Smiths' home last year with sudden wind gusts, after they pooped all over my daisy. Among other examples. Yeah, I definitely handled all four elements, particularly where difficult foster families were involved. Though I was nowhere near Wade's level of expertise with fire, I was comfortable saying that setting stuff ablaze came easily to me. This ability was closely followed by skill with water. Air and earth were still in their early stages, but based on how I'd seen my powers evolve over the years, I'd already figured it was only a matter of time. Alton noticed the change in my expression and leaned forward, smiling as his holographic sphere puffed away.
"Any of that sound familiar to you, Harley?"
he asked. Judging by the fluttering in my stomach, he was excited about my potential abilities.
"What can you do, where the four elements are concerned?"
"Not much, to be honest," I shrugged, the term rare instance still blaring in the back of my head. Even in the world of magicals, I was a weirdo.
"She can use fire, though that's a very loose description," Wade interjected, keeping his hands in his pockets.
The dude loved his suits, just like Alton. Two peas in a pod. Yet the elder pea seemed to have more common sense and sympathy.
"Aha."
Alton nodded, his eyes twinkling with interest.
"And what else?"
"Water," I replied. Then let out a long sigh and told him what he clearly yearned to hear. "Air and earth." A couple of moments went by in absolute silence, while I analyzed both Alton's and Wade's emotions. They were surprised, particularly Wade. Alton had seen it coming, from what I could tell.
"Let me get this straight." Wade blinked several times. "You can manipulate all four elements."
"I listed all four, didn't I?" I murmured, keeping my gaze fixed on Alton. He seemed uncertain of what to do next, until a revelation filled him with relief and excitement.
"Harley, we should get you tested properly,"
Alton finally said.
"Tested?
I'm not getting poked and prodded here. I didn't let the government get me, and there's no way you boys are sticking me with needles and whatever else," I shot back, instantly closing up like an armadillo before its predators.
"It's not like that,"
Alton said, shaking his head.
"You have to understand something, Harley. The San Diego Coven is relatively young and not stellar. Not yet, anyway. It went through years of neglect until I took over. We have talented magicals here, but most of them are mediocre, so to speak. Having someone who can manipulate all four elements in this city is rare. And Wade mentioned telekinesis, too?"
I scowled at Wade, mentally branding him a snitch. He replied with a disinterested shrug, then took his hands out of his pockets and put them behind his back, in a solemn posture.
"Shall I escort her to Adley?" Wade asked. "I'll come with you."
Alton stood up and walked around his desk. "Wait, what? Where are we going? What tests?"
"Hold on," I growled, then shot to my feet, wrestling with panic and fear as I tried to keep my composure.
Alton and Wade stopped just before they reached the double doors, then turned around to face me.
"It's okay, Harley," Alton said. "We're not going to hurt you. We just need to find out exactly what you can do. I'll make assessments based on that. It's part of the process. Nothing to fear."
In his defense, Alton had been nothing but kind and courteous, explaining stuff I'd waited my whole life to hear. There were rules in this place, and since he'd basically allowed me in, even if on temporary basis, the least I could do was indulge the guy and let him assess my abilities. I can't believe it. I'm meeting real-life warlocks and witches, and you all sound like bureaucratic pencil pushers, with processes and assessments and whatever else makes you think you're in control of your lives, I complained, following them as they crossed the hallway.
"From chaos comes order,"
Alton replied with a wink. Chapter 8. Wade pushed open the doors to another chamber ahead, while Alton stayed by my side as we walked in. Judging by the pristine white walls and square neon light fixtures on the ceiling,
This was a lab of sorts. My stomach churned in response to the various chemical smells, while my gaze darted from glass vials and jars to potted plants, ceramic dishes loaded with colorful powders, and a plethora of herbal and mineral paraphernalia. A white plastic chair stood in the middle of the room. A sturdy-looking thing, with a stainless steel podium base, two attached side tables, and brown leather straps on the armrests and front legs.
"Whoa,"
I breathed, then stilled, staring at the chair.
"Relax. The straps are not for you,"
a woman said. There was a hint of amusement in her voice as she emerged from behind a large potted hibiscus bush in the far right corner of the room. The floor was smooth and white. I felt like a rat in a testing lab. The woman was a head shorter than me, and in her mid-30s, with fine expression lines bringing out her violet eyes. She wore her black hair in a short pixie cut, with purple tips, in deep contrast to her elegant gray pantsuit and white lab coat.
"Harley, this is Adley Della Bart. She's our physician,"
Alton said, as Adley reached out and shook my trembling hand. Only then did I realize how nervous I was.
"Pleasure to meet you, Harley,"
Adley replied, and I gave her a brief nod in return. Curiosity emanated from her, and it was aimed at me. There was also a tinge of excitement as she smiled.
"Why don't you have a seat?"
I looked at her, then at Alton, Wade, and the white chair, before I crossed my arms and shook my head. "That thing looks like what's at the end of a death sentence," I said, grappling with my anxiety. I'd spent my whole life staying out of labs and hospitals, so I was having a hard time associating this room with anything good.
"Like I said, the straps are not for you, Harley,"
Adley insisted, then motioned for me to sit.
"Then who are they for?"
I replied.
"For purges,"
Wade interjected, impatiently rolling his eyes.
"Just sit in the damn chair.
What are purges?" I didn't budge. Like a kid about to get into the dentist's chair, I was stalling.
"Purges are a natural process for magicals,"
Alton replied, giving me a warm smile in an attempt to soothe me.
"When we use magic, when we enlist the powers of chaos, our bodies gather a type of toxic waste, negative energy, poisonous darkness that builds up as we exercise our abilities. It's directly proportional to the strength of the magic we use. The more powerful the spell, the more toxins that gather inside us."
"Purges are a healthy and necessary way for our bodies to expel this dark energy,"
Adley added. "In the beginning, they weren't monitored or conducted in contained environments, such as this room. But now we know better. We can even predict when a magical needs to purge, as there are certain symptoms."
"Why do they need to be in a controlled environment?" I asked. "Because the purge can be extremely painful," Alton replied. "Witches have described it as worse than childbirth. Personally, I can tell you, it hurts. It burns and claws at your insides, as if you're being torn to shreds in slow motion."
"You've purged." I tried to visualize the process. He nodded.
"More than once, yes."
"What happens to the toxic whatever?"
"Once it makes contact with the air, it materializes into a monster. Shapes and dimensions vary, but usually the beast's size echoes the magical's power. A powerful witch can generate a creature the size of a mountain, for example. I'll tell you more about this later, though. For now, Harley, we need to get you tested."
Alton motioned toward the chair once more. The gargoyle from the other night came to mind. Was that a purge monster, too? Clearly, I had more follow-up questions at this point, but Alton didn't seem interested in answering until I complied with his request. After a few seconds worth of back and forth in my head, I eventually conceded and sat in the white chair, my skin crawling as my fingers touched the armrests.
"How do you plan on testing me?"
I asked, my gaze following Adley as she walked over to a nearby cabinet, then pulled open a drawer. I couldn't see more from that angle, but I could hear various metallic instruments clanging, sending shivers down my spine. I can still run if need be.
I'll just whack the three of them against the wall or something and shoot out of here.
I'll need a little bit of your blood, Adley replied, turning around to face me.
Dread froze the blood in my veins at the sight of a freakishly large metal syringe in her hand. It looked like something they used back at the turn of the century, with a needle thick enough to probably kill a small animal.
Oh, this is going to hurt like a mother.
Nope, I'm out of here. Okay, thanks. Bye. I sprang up, my brain instantly switching into survival mode. There was no way I'd let them stick that monstrous thing in me.
Sit down.
Wade's voice pierced through me, and I lost control over my body. My muscles stiffened, the connection to my brain cut off somehow. Frost coated my veins as I looked at him and saw his hand raised, his rings glowing blue. Oh, crap. I sat down, my joints crunching and hurting as I desperately tried to fight it. I couldn't. Wade had telekinetic abilities, too, and they were much more powerful than mine.
What are you doing? I hissed, glowering at him.
You need to hold still, he replied,
while Alton put a hand on my shoulder, squeezing gently. My heart pumped erratically. My breath hitched. Every fiber in my body cried out for release, but Wade didn't let go. He wasn't going to let me go until they were done with their test.
Adley came closer, holding up the empty syringe for me to see. I'm sorry, Harley, she said softly. It will just pinch for a bit, and then we'll let you go. We need to assess your powers.
Let me guess, your dumbass rules? I spat, narrowing my eyes at Alton, then Wade.
Alton nodded slowly, watching as Adley brought the needle closer to my arm.
Yes, we must all follow them, for your safety and ours. Relax, we've all done this, Wade replied,
then moved his fingers, forcing my left forearm to turn over so Adley could stick the needle into my vein. I cursed under my breath, heat spreading through my forearm, swiftly followed by sharp pain as Adley's needle pierced my skin. She drew a few milliliters of blood. It was over quickly, though, and Wade kept Alton's promise, letting me go as soon as Adley removed the syringe from my throbbing arm.
Ow!
I groaned. Adley put a piece of sterilized cotton against the puncture wound and pushed my forearm up for me to keep pressure until the bleeding stopped. This reminded me of my first vaccines. Fortunately, my telekinetic abilities manifested after the shots. Otherwise, there would have been some pediatricians in San Diego with permanent psychological and physical scars, for sure.
Again, truly sorry, Harley, but we had to.
Alton tried to apologize, but I gestured for him to shut up.
Shush, I muttered. It's done. Now what?
We see what you're made of. Adley smiled and brought out a wide copper bowl with strange markings engraved on the inner lip. I could have sworn they were runes or hieroglyphs. I should have paid more attention in preppy history class.
You'll pay for that, by the way,
I snarled, pointing a menacing finger at Wade, who replied with a light chuckle.
Dream on, he said.
I didn't pursue it further. He was going to get paid in kind for this physical violation. The irony didn't escape me, as far as my outrage was concerned. I'd used my telekinesis on others, after all. I'd physically harmed them, too.
Ugh, do unto others, and so on.
Okay, let's see what Harley Smith can do, Adley said, as she emptied the syringe into the copper bowl, with Wade and Alton moving closer, while I craned my neck to get a better look. The blood trickled down into the center of the bowl, then purposefully spread out in thin crimson streams, forming a variety of patterns against the copper surface, like some kind of mandala, swirls and lines repeating in a circular fashion.
We call this reading, Adley explained, analyzing the blood pattern. It gives me a clear picture of your key traits and abilities.
Okay, I murmured.
What does it say?
Oh, wow, she replied, her forehead smoothing. She seemed to recognize something in those lines and curves.
You have all four elements. That is truly impressive,
And rare? Very rare, actually. Telekinesis? Oh, you're an empath. She beamed at me, her excitement genuine and quickly replicated by Alton, whose eyes widened as he stared at me with pure, unadulterated joy. I'd referred to myself as an empath up to this point after some online searches for what I was experiencing. It had simply come across as the most relatable term I'd found in the dictionary. It was interesting to see how the magicals were using it as an actual label.
You're an empath, Harley? Why didn't you say so?
Alton beamed at me. It's not exactly something I just blurred out. I shrugged, my gaze shifting to Wade. As exposed as I felt in that moment, I did feel partially avenged. Judging by the stunned look on his face and the flurry of raw panic pouring out of him, Wade was coming to terms with the fact that I could read him like an open book. And he freaking hated it. I stifled a grin, pressing my lips into a thin line as I looked at Alton and Adley again. They were both looking at me as if I were some rare specimen, a magical unicorn.
Hmm. This is strange, Adley said, frowning as she turned the bowl around. I can't read further into you.
What do you mean? I asked, still wrapping my head around this new reality of mine, while Wade was boiling on the inside. His anger at his own vulnerabilities made it difficult for me to concentrate. It then hit me that I could enjoy this a little more, while he was still coping. Wade, can you please get yourself under control? You're making it hard for me to focus.
Why do you say that?
Alton replied, somewhat confused, while Wade cursed under his breath and scowled at me. My heart grew three sizes.
He's worried because I can feel everything he feels, I shot back with a smirk. I mean, he's nervous because he feels vulnerable now that he knows.
Which is okay. I'm enjoying the look on his face. As soon as he heard that, Wade seemed to find the last ounce of self-control he had at the bottom of his consciousness and crossed his arms over his chest, pretending to look inside the bowl. Alton didn't bother to reply, but he was definitely amused.
No, I can't read you further. And that's not a regular occurrence, Adley concluded, her brow furrowed.
Do you know why? Alton asked.
Nope, she shook her head. But based on what I'm seeing here, Harley is a walking contradiction. She has all these abilities already, and yet her power levels are weak at best. According to what her blood is telling me, she's a...
mediocre. Harley Smith is a mediocre.
Wade interrupted her with a smirk aimed directly at me. It was his turn to enjoy something I wasn't sure I understood yet.
Does the term mean something else for a magical? I asked.
No. It means exactly that.
Alton sighed, confused and disappointed at the same time.
You're what we call a mediocre. Lackluster. Moderate abilities with not much power. You'll probably experience a single purge in this lifetime.
Oh. Okay, I replied, somewhat disappointed myself. For a brief second, the idea of being destined for greatness had appealed to me. With all my struggles to fit in somewhere, to find my purpose and place in the world, I thought I might be able to excel as a witch, a super special magical. Unfortunately, it seemed as though the universe, or chaos, for that matter, had decided that I was going to be a mediocre. And I had no idea how much I hated that word until it was used to label me. I let out a deep breath, my shoulders dropping slowly.
Don't despair, though.
Alton tried to encourage me, though I could tell from his tone and his emotions that he wasn't very hopeful either.
You can practice and get better. Being a mediocre doesn't mean you're useless in any way. On the contrary.
What, now you're trying to boost her morale? Wade said. Let's not sugarcoat this. She's a mediocre, and that's it. There's no point in making her think she'll ever amount to more. She'll get herself killed trying to do something that's out of her league.
No, it's cool, I said. I'm still a better person than you will ever be, so at least I've got that going for me.
Now, no need to get spiky. Both of you take it down a notch.
Alton intervened, raising his hand in a pacifying gesture. The red garnets on his dragon cufflinks glimmered in the white neon lights.
I still don't get why I can't read deeper. Adley frowned, still staring at the bowl.
I'm sure you'll get to the bottom of this. Reading is your expertise, Miss Della Bart, not mine.
Alton replied, trying to end the matter there.